Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this session where we're going to be talking about Old Street and Shoreditch, in a Shoreditch area that's been changing hugely over recent years, but we've now got a number of developments which are really changing the shape and the offer in that particular part of town. The tech businesses continue to grow, looking for different sorts of accommodations, more sophisticated accommodation. There's a real community there now, actually driving change and, of course, driving up rents as well. So we've got a panel here who are going to tell us a bit about the area, and our first speaker is going to be Simon Rowley from GPE. And so perhaps you could give us an idea about who you're looking for. 160 Old Street, one of your projects, which is now under construction with your logos all over the hoarding, isn't it? So perhaps you can tell us what you're looking for there.
Well, I think you're in quite a privileged position if you're able to be selective as to who your tenants are going to be in the current market. But we are lucky enough at the moment to be talking to a number of parties. And I think what struck us is the diverse demand base that we've been able to draw from. And I guess one of the consistent trends is that when we're presenting to people in our marketing suite, invariably you have either an FD in the room thinking about business efficiencies and bottom line, or you have an HR director thinking about staff attraction and retention. And from our perspective, what we try and do is obviously prove that our building can satisfy both those parties. From a building perspective and a business perspective, the building has multiple entrances, optionality on different sizes of floors, intensification to one person per 8 square meters, but actually the all-in average occupancy costs are in the region of £85 per square foot, which makes it some of the most affordable Grade A space in central London. And I must admit, when I first set out on the project, I thought that the majority of our demand would come and be motivated by value. But the rents that Simon and Oliver have managed to achieve on their respective schemes is proof that businesses want to move to Old Street for more than just value. That it's what the area has to offer and what staff want. And from our perspective, our building has a number of things that we think are good for the staff. We've got terraces on every single floor, which amounts to about 5 tennis courts worth of outdoor space, double the industry standard of cycle spaces, and a really bright floor plate, 90% of the floor plates within 8 meters of a window. So a nice environment before you even go outside the door and find what the area actually has to offer. And sitting at the convergence of Clerkenwell, City and Shoreditch does give this area a real vibrancy and energy that I don't think we have seen in many other districts of London recently. And the regeneration that these guys have done, you know, they've done a lot of the heavy lifting for us, thankfully, in bringing new tenants to the area, new amenity, means that I think there's a lot more to come, particularly with Crossrail and Old Street Roundabout, which no doubt we'll talk about in a moment. So we've got a very diverse demand base, from charities all the way through to the kind of expected tech media sector that we're talking to at the moment.
Thank you very much. Now, our next speaker is sort of Old Street pioneer, really, I think. Simon Silver, Derwent London, and did a project one end of Old Street, and now you're just completing a project at the other end. Tell us a bit about what you're up to, Simon.
Well, the first one was, of course, many years ago in the early 90s. And we went east for various reasons at Derwent. One, I suppose, was for value, and another was the building stock. I think going east, we found that, you know, people wanted more interesting spaces, even all those years ago, and more creative companies were moving out of central London, going east, and we found that the stock was just fascinating, and we bought 80,000 feet at Moorlands, where HMM, our architects, are residents, and where we met them all those years ago. I think there were 4 of them. They're now 350-odd. We were a much smaller company, and the transformation of the area has been absolutely remarkable, but I think what it was for us was always this question of industrial-type spaces And 20 years later, or longer, we're finishing a building that's branded the White Collar Factory. And the obvious reason for that is it gives enormous volumes, you know, 3.4 floor-to-ceiling heights, which we know people enjoy. And the office market has changed drastically, so we want to keep pace with it.
And what was it? £4 a square foot, wasn't it? When you bought Morelands, people were paying £4 a square foot in that building. They pay a bit more now, don't they?
£3.50. We won't argue over 50p. But yeah, no. Rents were obviously much cheaper. In fact, people were finding refuge from you know a downturn, and you could obviously take premises at under a tenner a foot. And obviously, we've seen it grown, thankfully, we bought quite a lot of real estate in the area over the years, so we have a cluster of properties now. You know, we bought the old company's house, of course, which is about 170,000 feet. So we've got about four buildings, 600,000 or 700,000 feet, and we're about to, hopefully in a year or so's time, rebuild the building adjacent White Collar Factory, which is Monmouth House, which should provide another 120. So we love the area.
Very good. Well, another company loves the area, and actually other sort of trendy places in the city fringe is Helical, and I mean, so much so that there's rumours that Gerald Kay is going to grow a beard, but instead we have Oliver Rippier, who is going to tell us about what Helical is up to around Shoreditch.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. Yeah, I grew a beard especially for the occasion. We're big fans of the area. We've been here since 2011 when we acquired the Bower, 330,000 square foot landmark scheme on Old Street Roundabout. There's a focus on design. It's a design-led scheme being designed by AHMM. Phase one was completed in 2015 and entirely pre-let to a range of tech and media operators. And as part of that phase, we largely completed our public realm and retail offer. And we're lucky in such a scheme to have some public space. It's an area of very tight urban grain, which gives it its character, which is why we've thought very carefully about our retail and restaurant offer there. Phase two, the tower, is 180,000 square feet, arranged over 17 office floors. Takes the slab-sided architecture of the 1960s and brings it up to the modern day. It's a building that we think treads the line between tech and corporate. And one really interesting differentiating factor is that we have double-height spaces, which means tenants who take more than one level can link up their floors to create permeability. And that's a trend we've seen with occupiers in the Bower. Any tenant who's taken more than one floor has put extra stairs in to create an attractive and a workspace that works for them. So that will finish in June next year. We've let floors 1 to 6 to WeWork. WeWork will provide a great amenity for tenants on the site. So occupiers who want project space, or maybe for their contingent or freelance workforce, which is increasingly a trend within the market at the moment, will be able to use that space. And overall, they're about 18% of our rent roll.
Thank you very much. So our last speaker in this group is Sandra Jones, Director of Data Loft and Research Partners and Rambidus Consulting. So Sandra, can you tell us about, obviously the success of Old Street, but is the gentrification sort of pushing out some of the people who gave it that life in the first place?
Yeah, I sat in the seminar before this one on the city, and all the talk was about change in work styles, change in the way people use public realm, change in the geography of London, and talking about how the city is now geographically at the centre of central London, what's effectively become the business heart of London. And I think that's critical, really. This is what's going on in Old Street is part of a very dynamic process that happens in cities and happens in successful cities, and it's been happening over a long period of time in London. So your question, is it driving occupiers out? Well, yeah, we've just heard the scale of the rent rises. Yes, undoubtedly, occupiers are moving on because rents, because they've been priced out. I mean, I've had two conversations with architects recently in the area who've been in the area for 15 or 20 years, and they've kind of weathered the price increases over the years, but now with the next rent review pending, that is the end of the line. That combined with the rates revaluation, that is the end of the line for them. Those two are actually quite sanguine about it. One is moving to, they actually live in central London, they're moving their practice back to the home base in a Mews house, and the other one is quite up for the opportunity to try another part of London. But absolutely, yes, businesses are priced out by what is going on with terms of the change. I think the real question is whether that matters, and I've kind of partly answered that by saying it's all part of the dynamic process of a healthy, vibrant economy. But there are issues. I think it's fine as long as there are other places for those businesses to go at the right price where they can carry on, you know, successfully with their businesses. And there we do have an issue. At the moment, there are alternatives. There's South Bank, there's King's Cross, there's Stratford. But we also, the normal process would be that businesses would move to the next place along the rental gradient. And that's where we have an issue. So around Tech City is right on the edge of the CAS, the Central Activities Zone. Within the Central Activities Zone and places and certain other designated areas like Tech City, there's protection for employment uses. Outside those protected areas, there isn't, and there's been a huge amount of office space lost to residential. So we've do a lot of work on employment land studies, and we work with a lot of boroughs, London boroughs, who would love to have clusters of tech or start-up businesses and actually have a real problem protecting their existing employment space, never mind creating new employment spaces. So I think that issue of protecting employment space once you're outside the exempt zone or anywhere within Article 4 is a real issue. And we, as Ramidus, have gone on record to say that we think two things need to happen, and we think that there probably needs to be an extension of the central activities zone so that we can push that protected area out a little bit further, but also that we need to see the end of permitted development rights, because as long as they're there, we're losing too much office space. I've actually got some statistics, because we've just been looking at these numbers. I'm going to refer to my paper to avoid a Diane Abbott moment. PDR approval, permitted development rights, what they call prior approvals across Greater London, could potentially mean the loss of 16 million square feet of office space across Greater London. That's about 6% of the stock. But if we look exclusively at Outer London, and a lot of these Outer London boroughs would like to have their own tech clusters, 22% of the stock in Outer London has an approval for conversion from office to residential, 22%. Oh. And it goes further than that, because obviously there is office space in Outer London that probably doesn't have an economic use, that probably isn't of value. But 55% of the prior approvals are actually on buildings that are in use as office space, that are occupied by office occupiers. So they're going to be displacing office occupiers to go to residential. So, just to sum up, I don't think what's happening in Old Street is an issue. It's about protecting office space elsewhere so that these businesses have somewhere to go.
Yeah, that's very worrying, isn't it? Well, perhaps we can just talk about that spread, because, both GP and Derwent, lot of activity in West End, Fitzrovery area around Great Portland Street, that sort of area, which, again, has seen this move up. There used to be lots of architects around Charlotte Street. They can't afford it. Only engineers can afford it now. And so then the architects moved to Shoreditch, and now they're moving again somewhere else. I mean, this is a pattern we're seeing. How long can it go on? I mean, I guess, are you looking at space outside the central activity zone as well now as people move out?
So we've undertaken an exercise very regularly over the last 5 to 10 years of looking at emerging markets. I think what we've felt in the past is that there hasn't been enough supportive economic reasons to actually invest in those areas. But what has happened in Fitzrovia and indeed in Southwark with the Jubilee Line and everything that's happened since then is it's an evolutionary part of London. You know, I think the planners have got a difficult job in trying to balance not only the people who are fearing change and are worried about increasing prices, but also managing, obviously, the expectations of developers who, at the end of the day, are commercial beings. And so it's a difficult balancing act at the end of the day, but we certainly feel that Fitzrovia has obviously arrived and Simon has done plenty in the area as well. Old Street feels as though it's getting there. Southwark's got there. You know, there are other areas that Crossrail is hitting where clearly you could see some supportive reasons to invest in.
But I asked Sandra about people moving out who were the sort of founders of Tech City. But presumably, the sorts of people who are moving into your buildings are businesses that are growing, successful, and actually can afford to pay a bit more rent than they did when they moved into a scruffy warehouse, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, I mean, you made the point, you know, architects moving. We've actually seen lots of firms of architects thrive with the regeneration of London and all the different areas in London. And obviously many companies have grown, and I'm sure, like my colleagues here, we've all got portfolios and we work with our tenants, and when tenants are growing, you want to accommodate them. So we've got plenty of firms that have grown and thrived and taken more space. And don't forget, you're often refurbishing or regenerating a building or even renewing it. And, you know, the former tenants, it's a free market and people do move around. I mean, for all the years I've been in business, you know, this has happened. And it's like homes as well. Sadly, you can't always stay in the same place, even if you want to. But, you know, it's finding the alternative. And I think regenerating and refurbishing areas is, you know, we've all seen the amazing transformation in London. It's only for the good. A byproduct of it is sometimes, obviously, people can't afford it, but there are other areas cropping up now. You know, you hear of places like Hackney Wick and going east further beyond, you know, Shoreditch. And I think that will continue to happen, where people can find affordable offices. Another point worth mentioning, and I remember discussing this last year very briefly, was that White Collar Factory, we do actually have an element of affordable office. I mean, you know, boroughs and people often talk about, you know, affordable residential. But affordable offices is an interesting concept. And I think there are companies where it's sad, maybe, if it's, you know, £10-15 a foot, they can't stay. And I think even if it's a very small element, if all the commercial developers retained a small element of affordable offices and worked with the planners, it's something, if multiplied many, many times, could be meaningful. So maybe that's a way of looking at it as well, another way of looking at it.
That's something that's changed recently. So we too have provided that within 160 Old Street, and I know that you're providing it at Monmouth House, which you mentioned earlier. Yeah. So,
and this is through Islington's insistence that you do that, is it?
Well, I think originally you offered it at White Collar, but it's now becoming more of a policy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Sandra, is that something you're finding in other places, or is this unusual that you should get that amount of affordable in a busy place? You can see affordable out in less well-to-do areas where they're trying to generate business, but this is clearly successful.
No, I think that's a really laudable thing to do. I don't know. I mean, I think sometimes there's a negotiation and maybe there's an extra floor in return for a floor of affordable space. I think that's a reasonable negotiation that goes on with planners. I don't know if that was the case with you, but I don't think that's unreasonable. But that's not an unreasonable way to go, to say that, you know, we can come to an arrangement here where we will provide that, but we probably need a bit more rentable space in the scheme. Is that something you'd look at? Because I know, who was on the panel before talking about 22 Bishopsgate? They said they're doing that in there as well. They've got an incubator floor, which they'd, I think, come to an arrangement with the city. I'm not familiar with it. I think they said it was they were capped rents or affordable rents or whatever the definition is in there as well. That feels like it's a reasonable negotiation to have.
As you know, there are many negotiations you have with with local authorities, so it might be in place of something else.
Yeah.
And though it's only a small area, it might only be a few thousand feet. As I say, if it became sort of more popular and something that people embraced, I think it could be a good way forward.
So it might be in place of a residential component or some off-site residential.
Obviously, anything. I mean, I think what we're all doing between us is the larger the buildings, the larger the developments, we're starting to place make, and we're creating public realm. I mean, I don't know whether you remember, particularly the Derwent site. There was 100,000 feet of three old sort of late 50s, early 60s buildings, and there was certainly no public realm. And you're creating. We created 300,000 feet, multi-use, lots of restaurants, the same as both Great Portland and Helical. It's all for the good. And yes, of course, it's more expensive. They're much nicer buildings. And it's a free market, people are moved. But it would be nice to retain some of the people, even if it's a very small amount, who sadly have to up and leave and who are perhaps contributing to that building or area. And I hope it becomes more widespread.
I think one of the problems when we look for the next place that those businesses can go is that the financials don't add up in the same way. So the values for residential far outstrip the values for commercial. And then when you're looking at affordable commercial, it becomes even more difficult. So it's a more difficult negotiation. And maybe they need more help or a bit more muscle on their side.
Can we just return to the actual area? Because one of the big changes is City Road is now a huge cluster of towers. Oliver, is that sort of changing things from your point of view, having that sort of residential close, or is it just...
Definitely positive to see development and regeneration, but that's primarily on the Hackney side of City Road where that's been encouraged. But I think coming back to the affordable workspace debate, I think councils should think carefully about introducing negative controls on developments. They should be encouraging more space, looking at daylight, sunlight, neighbourly matters as to whether are they really that important when you're in areas where they're incredibly well connected, such as Old Street. We should be increasing the massing and increasing the density within these areas. And obviously, rents being a function of supply and demand, that will have an impact on rental levels. So overall, yes, development in the area is positive, but I think we need support from local authorities, and we also need to see where our Section 106 monies are going. We've invested £3.6 million paid over £3.6 million to Islington and not seen any of it back yet. Do we want to see it back to our scheme? No, we want to see the improvements in the area.
I thought the public realm was being improved, the peninsulisation of the roundabout and the improved pedestrian and cycling conditions.
Well, we haven't seen it yet. We haven't seen it yet. And I think we need to see faster progress in these public...
So no date for that to happen. I thought it was on TfL's schedule.
It is on the schedule, apparently, to start towards the end of next year. But that's essential infrastructure to improve what is one of the most congested underground stations in London. It should have been there already. The public realm, which they've invested in previously, probably 5-10 years ago, isn't being maintained. And so we need to be on the front foot with investment in the area.
So what are you doing to make sure that happens? Because, I mean, further down Old Street and to Clerkenwell Road, Camden are actually pushing for the new Old Street Boulevard, which is improvement to public space, which is key benefit to the sorts of occupiers that you're all looking for, really. Public space and also actually cycling infrastructure is important because you've got some modal share of about 70% at rush hour and along that street. So it's very important something's done. So what are you doing to get TfL to pull their finger out?
Well, we're investors in the local business improvement district with Derwent and GP, I believe, and working with local developers to lobby to ensure that those changes do happen. But Helical on its own have created over an acre of public realm and invested in that. That wasn't publicly accessible previously. We obviously put in cycling infrastructure, cycle parking and all the rest of it, which is accessible and usable by our tenants. And so we come back to the previous debate on how affordable workspace is. Well, tenants are getting a lot more for their money these days, so you've got to remember that.
Oh, good. So, Oliver mentioned the bid, Simon. I mean, you were very instrumental in getting the Fitzrovia bid up and going and also supporting the bid in this area. What does the bid do for the development community in space like this? And is it an effective mechanism for speeding up regeneration and improvement?
Yeah, absolutely. It's also, you build relationships through your bid with the community. And you know, the caring developer is obviously an important aspect about what we all do. And certainly in Fitzrover, I know the bid's been extremely successful. I think the people, especially residents, were originally dubious as to what it would bring. But I think there are a lot of benefits that have been obvious. And I think bids all around London, you know, I know there's obviously the Paddington bid and there are many others. And again, it's only for the good.
And can I assume that maybe the others can tell us what they're doing? I judged a very interesting competition that you organised a couple of years ago about reception areas and how you animate the street through reception areas, which actually is reception is generally the most boring part of buildings and pretty nasty to get through generally. And are you following through with that competition to animate the street in the reception? And then I'll ask the other two what they're doing.
It's provocative to ask anyone from Derwent about entrances being boring, because I think making an entrance has always been something that we've majored on. And I think it's your first impression of a building, whatever that building, even if it's a cultural use. And so, you know, look, we've majored on good architecture and design. And sometimes we're very happy to sacrifice space to make more, you know, more interesting spaces. And that's certainly the case, I mean, in the majority of our buildings. It was an interesting competition. What actually came out of that competition was how people reacted to receptions and the old-fashioned way of running a reception. And it was strange to hear people say they were actually threatened by them and us. And I think that's interesting, and that creative companies want a different way of perhaps their receptions being run, which we're certainly have taken up at White Collar Factory. We now have a series of reception desks, a series of sort of helpers or receptionists, and just a different way of looking at things.
So, Oliver, does that, your occupier, does that shift the way you look at the way that people enter the building?
Absolutely. Helical have focused on buildings with either, and schemes with either their own public realm or shared public realm or public space, which could be internal. I don't know which architect who said it, but our good architecture is wasting space. So I think we have given up a significant amount of ground floor space on the ground at the Bower, about 4,000 square feet. It has the obligatory cafe, and obviously the necessary reception to serve the building, but also some softer spaces and some harder spaces as well. It's only kind of loosely monitored, and in some ways is affordable workspace because it's free. Anyone can walk in there and use it.
How about anything spectacular planned?
We at Old Street, we definitely took our lead from some of the great hotels in the area, so the Ace Hotel, Hoxton Hotel, and if you walk into the lobbies of those buildings, there is not only buzz and energy, but also, you know, you do have the hotel reception, but you have an ability for people to work and occupy those areas, and that's definitely what we're seeking to do. As Oliver says, there's the obligatory cafe, which is leading in, but I think that you could see a trend in the future of taking what Simon's done at White Collar with a more informal desk to the next level, where actually the reception is just one large cafe, and that, you know, with advances in technology, setting aside for a moment the privacy issues and security issues, that actually could be a way that receptions will become far more energized.
Good. Well, let's have some questions from the floor. Can we turn up the house lights a bit? Because we can't see anything from here. So. Right. Who's got a question? Blimey. Jolly good. Yes. If you could just say who you are.
Hello. Grant Brooker from Foster & Partners. Oliver made a point talking about legislation. And I thought maybe the panel could say which particular piece of legislation or regulation they would most like to remove as it frustrates development.
Right. Who would like to kick off? Sandra, what about you? Must think about this all the time.
You know all
the regulations and the guidance and stuff.
I've already made my pitch for ending permitted development rights, to remove the lack of legislation.
Okay, well, that's one. But perhaps, Simon, I can prompt you, because I remember somebody getting a bit frustrated on the white collar factory that you wanted to raise the roof line a little bit so that it'd be easier to give extra space, didn't you? Increase your floor to ceiling height, but Islington kept you to a maximum height, isn't that?
No, not exactly.
No?
In fact,
that's
not actually right. Because previously, Michael Squire had won a planning permission for a 35-storey, very slim residential tower.
Really?
And whilst we had rights of light negotiations with the whole of Mallow Street, we got round it by creating a cut, and it was access into the public realm. And doing it that way. But, I mean, there's all sorts of legislation, some that you obviously you dislike, or some that don't do developers any favours. But I can't actually think of any one sort of major disadvantage that we're facing. You know, planning is tricky. It takes a long, long time. I mean, especially these big buildings, we're all engulfed for years. But we get there in the end, and hopefully some really good buildings come out of it.
So obviously no problems, Grant, really.
Well, there are.
There is one thing that's quite topical at the moment, which if we were talking residential would be about the space standards. But I don't know if we're going into a residential conversation, but I think there's quite a lot of thought that the minimum space standards are causing a problem in creating the kind of residential development in London that is in demand. So
more micro housing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, another question. Yes, question just here. Microphone coming your way.
Excuse me. Sorry. Hi, thanks. My name is Beth Kay. I'm from Haringey Council. How important is a thriving nighttime economy to your tenants?
Yes. Yeah, Mayor's very keen on that. The nighttime czar now, isn't there?
In short, very important. It's a key driver of demand. I mean, people in our building, we've got tech and mainly media tenants, and they don't work 9 to 5. They work 8 till 10 or 8 till 8, and their hours aren't maybe as traditional as those in the property industry, for example. And they want to have interesting nightlife on their doorstep. And treading the balance between nightlife and some of the externalities associated with that is a challenge. I think West London has probably lost that battle. East London, you know, really should fly the flag for an interesting 24-hour economy, and maybe that's where business improvement districts and so on can help with cleaning up the morning after and so on, and keeping investment and maintenance in the area. So.
I suppose the problem also is it depends how much residential you have surrounding you, because those are the people that are going to be upset with the nighttime economy. If you're reasonably free of it, then, you know, it's absolutely essential and that it grows. And I totally agree that it's just part of the community, part of London, and people want to enjoy it. Yeah.
The city has had a battle with that historically. You know, that you leave the city after 6 o'clock and it could have been dead. And they are redressing that to a degree, but Old Street has it in spades on its doorstep already. And I think one of the things that the planners have to try and protect as much as possible are those kind of amenities, those bits that make the space, the area, as attractive as it is.
Yeah. Another question. Yes, one over there.
Jolly Hammond, HTG. I'm just curious to know of the three propcos on the panel. Certainly the Derwent and the Helical have, I think, announced deals with the big-name co-working businesses. Just curious to know, given that you're all pretty good leaders in providing business space, whether you've got any thoughts around doing your own branded co-working businesses, or whether you're happy to, in effect, delegate to the WeWorks of this world.
I'm smiling because it's a conversation we've recently had in our office, and I'm sure it's a conversation that's gonna you know, accelerate, and we're going to certainly look very closely at it. We're very happy to take certain certain companies, co-working companies. I have to say probably not all. And it's where it will definitely benefit the rest of your tenant community. They seem to be, where co-working is so exciting, is they're offering something to the building. It's not that they're not just self-contained. And people can become individual members. There's lots of interesting talks and discussions that go on. And I think it's a very exciting advent of office life. And I'm sure it's going to continue. But as to the question of whether we would open our own, at the moment it's run by experts. And I think, you know, starting your own, you have to think very seriously how far you want to take it. At Derwent, we certainly might well dip our toe into the water.
Any chance?
I think one of our greatest strengths is our expertise, like Simon said. And at this stage, we don't necessarily have those expertise to open one ourselves. It's been tried in the past. We know that Landsec are doing it right now, and we too have been having those kind of discussions. Whether it's through just opening ourselves or through some sort of organic growth, we will have to wait and see. But to date, we've been a bit more reluctant than maybe some of our peers to take on some of the serviced office companies because you're sacrificing your own asset to someone else. But I think as a proportion of a large building, they are inevitably going to become much, much more prevalent. And I know that there's one of the sort of WeWork principals in the room who has obviously been very busy over the last year and a half or so.
And you are...
echo those thoughts. Helical, for many years, have operated multi-let buildings from Shepherd's Bush in the west to the Loom in Whitechapel, and we've been very flexible offering leases and licences down to 6 to 12 months. But moving over to the co-working arena is very specialist, and I think that operators such as WeWork offer something genuinely different and also access to their worldwide network. And I think it is specialist, and I think we'll leave it to them for now.
So, Sandra, we see the rise of shared space. I mean, the graph just keeps going up, does it?
Yeah, I mean, and actually, it was something I was conscious that we hadn't talked about it when we were talking about affordability, and it obviously is one of the solutions to the affordability issue because because it's so much more flexible, you can buy by the desk, you're not buying space just in case you expand next year or, you know, for your occasional meeting rooms. So it is part of the solution to affordability. And yes, now that we seem to have found a business model that can work, because I think for years the sector was troubled by the fact that, you know, institutional investors just didn't find it an acceptable covenant. Yeah. But we seem to have overcome that now, and we've got business models sometimes based on ownership or based on partnerships that make it viable, and I can see it continuing to grow.
Very good. Well, watch this space. Well, we should draw things to a close now. I'd like to thank our speakers very much for talking so coherently about Old Street Shoreditch, and thank you all for listening.